Good morning, good Ner Shabbos. Today, Be'ezras Hashem, we're going to discuss the topic of Hashgacha Pratis. The concept of Hashgacha is one in which there's a lot of confusion and indeed a lot of debate. The basic notion that there is Hashgacha and that there is Hashgacha Pratis, divine providence and individual providence, is explicit many places in Tanakh. The stories in Tanakh, the lives of Avram Avinu and the Avos, clearly indicate that. Certainly the Parshios that we've been reading in Chumash indicate that. The Pasuk in Yirmiyahu says, Gedol ha'itza v'rav ha'alila sh'reinecha pikuchos al kol darchei bnei adam laseis le'ish kidrachav u'chifrim alalav. This Pasuk tells us two things. First of all, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is aware of what's happening in the world, and second of all, that he's mashgiach, that he gives people according to that which they deserve. I'd like to begin with a discussion of the Rambam, because the Rambam's position here is confusing. Indeed, it was debated fiercely, even in the times of the Rishonim, what precisely the Rambam held. If you turn to page 4 in your source books, the Rambam in Mishneh Torah famously writes, "V'davar zeh midarkei hatshuva shebizman shetavo tzara v'izaku eleha v'yariu yed'u hakol shebiglal oseyem harayim hora lahen. V'zeu shigrom lahem lahasir hatzar me'elayhem." When there's a disaster or an impending tragedy, what should the response be? It should be one of tshuva and tefillah. And if they respond with tshuva and tefillah, so they'll understand that the tragedy is occurring precisely because of their actions, it's hashgacha, and this will cause them to do tshuva. Aval im lo yizaku v'lo yariu el yomru davar zeh miminah ha'olam yira lanu v'tzara zu nikra nikreis. But if they say no, this is simply nature, so then harezu derech achzarius, this is cruelty. It's a fascinating word to use here. It, I believe, parallels what the Rambam writes in Hilchos Avelos, where he says that someone who is not misavel kemo shetzivu chachamim, he writes that too is derech achzarius. And the parallelism is obvious. The idea of Avelos, without getting into too much detail, a significant component of Avelos is the recognition that what happened is hashgacha, and thereby learn the lessons from the Avelos. So if someone is to not be misavel, kamo shetzivu chachamim, so that is achzarius. Likewise, if someone is to attribute the natural disasters to nature, or to the enemies, or to whoever, whatever the cause is, so that too is achzarius. And therefore, this, the Rambam says, is goremes lahem lihidabek b'maseim harayim v'tosif hatzara tzarus acheros hu shekasuf b'torah v'halachtem imi bakari v'halachti imachem b'chamas kari kilomar k'sha'avya imach aleichem tzara k'dei shetashuvu im taminu shu kari osif lachem chamas oso kari. That if you persist in believing that this is simply nature, the way of the world, so this will cause further suffering and further damage. Here the Rambam writes that there is, of course, hashgacha, at the very least on a national level, but I believe as well on an individual level, as we'll see. The Rambam in the guide, section 1, chapter 72, writes, "The governance and the providence of him may be exalted, accompany the world as a whole in such a way that the manner and true reality of this accompaniment are hidden from us. The faculties of human beings are inadequate to understand this." Here the Rambam tells us that hashgacha is something which we will never fully understand. Meaning to say, the nature, the exact nature of hashgacha is beyond our comprehension. This is a fascinating point. First of all, you should note that the Rambam here, as well as many other places, writes that this is something that we can't understand, that goes beyond our understanding. It's interesting. The Rambam was, of course, one of the great philosophers and someone who tries to answer all of the ultimate questions. But the Rambam also, more than any other thinker, writes that this is something we can't understand. It goes beyond our ability. In fact, there's a beautiful Rabbeinu Bachya on this week's Parsha, Parshas Yisro. The Pasuk says, Pen Yersu Lahalos El Hashem V'nifratzvam Amrav, something like that. So, Rabbeinu Bachya asks, what is the additional commandment over here? HaKadosh Baruch Hu had already told Moshe, and Moshe had already told the nation that they should make fences around Har Sinai to make sure nobody comes close. So what's being added by this additional warning? And Rabbeinu Bachya says that the God is that they were already told not to become physically close or to look with their eyes. But this additional warning is telling us not to think about matters which we are incapable of understanding. That we have to recognize that there are natural limits to the human intellect, and because we're physical creatures, there are certain types of things which we cannot understand. And when that is the case, we have to acknowledge that and then stop. And at Matan Torah, which of course was a time of tremendous giloy, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was warning the people that you have to be exceedingly careful about this point, to make sure not to go too far. As the Mishnah in Chagiga says, that we may not ask certain types of questions. Ma lifnim, what existed, for example, before the universe? Because we could only conceive of God and existence insofar as we relate to it, meaning to say, after the creation of the universe. The Gemara in Chagiga there quotes Ben Sira as warning, the muflam imchal tidrosh, don't ask things that you're incapable of understanding. And the Rambam actually interprets the pasuk that we quote in this week's parsha in the same way in the Hilchos Me'ilah, when he talks about tamei mitzvos. He says that when you uncover a mitzvah which you can't understand its reason, so your machshava towards it shouldn't be like it is towards other secular matters. Rather, you should recognize that there's great wisdom, something which goes beyond our understanding. And thus the Rambam here writes concerning hashgacha, that we have to acknowledge that ultimately how hashgacha works is something that we can't understand. And if we acknowledge that limitation, then we will be far better off. Now, to be sure, that doesn't mean to say that it's not something we should discuss at all. Indeed, the Rambam devotes a half dozen chapters in Mor Nevuchim to discussing hashgacha. But nevertheless, we have to accept our limitations. This is similar to what we saw last week when we saw the Ramban discuss the problem of evil. The Ramban there said that, on the one hand, we have to acknowledge that we'll never be able to fully understand everything, but at the same time, that doesn't stop us from trying to understand what we are capable of comprehending. In Chelak Beis, chapter 22, the Rambam stresses how the notion of miracles demonstrate creation, and the idea that there are miracles, which is of course a cornerstone of Torah thought, contradicts the Aristotelian perspective that matter is infinite and that the world always existed. Ayin Shum, if you'd like to discover precisely how it contradicts that perspective, but it's important to recognize this because the predominant view among philosophers at that point in time was the Aristotelian perspective and the Torah's perspective, namely that there are miracles, there is hashgacha, contradicts this. And thus, the Rambam writes in the Guide 225, as well as the Yud Gimel Ikarim, which is quoted in footnote 11, the importance of accepting and believing in the creation of the world. If we turn to page 6 in your source books, Mor Nevuchim Chelak Gimel, Perek Yud Zayin, so that's where the Rambam begins discussing providence at length. And he begins by noting that there are five ancient beliefs concerning Hashgacha. These five beliefs actually correspond to five positions in the Book of Iyov. If you recall last week, we read about how the Ramban understood that the Book of Iyov reflects not just the psychological struggles of a person coping with tremendous suffering, but that they also reflect philosophical positions. And this comes from the Rambam. Many other Rishonim assumed this. The Sefer Ikrim also writes about how the perspectives in Sefer Iyov, the five different positions, essentially correspond to different views pertaining to the topic of Hashgacha. And it's not surprising that the topic of Hashgacha is most prominently dealt with in the concept when discussing the concept of theodicy. And the Rambam begins here by noting that there are five ancient viewpoints, and each of these is referred to in the Torah, not just in the book of Iyov. And one of the five, of course, is the Torah's perspective. The first one is the view of the Greek philosopher Epicurus. And Epicurus essentially felt that there is no such thing as Hashgacha. Everything that happens in the world is the result of chance. The second perspective is the view of Aristotle. Aristotle believed that Shashkachas Hashem tichalev v'tipasek el galgal hayareach v'zeh si'if misharsho b'kadmus ha'olam, that Hashkacha does not exist in the sublunar realm. This relates to the Aristotelian perspective of the universe, and in the sublunar realm, meaning to say our world, which is below the moon, there is no Hashkacha. You could look at footnote 17 for a discussion of that general perspective on the universe. The Rambam here notes that this corresponds to his perspective pertaining to the eternity of matter, and it is against the Torah's perspective. According to Aristotle, for example, the Rambam writes that if a ship sinks and the ship has on it righteous people and wicked people, then that is totally random and haphazard. There's no basis for tefillah according to this perspective. The idea of davening, of course, is rooted in the notion that there is hashkacha, and that hashkacha will determine what happens in my world. At least the bakasha component of tefillah is based upon that. And therefore, this too, the Rambam writes, is against the Torah. Vasher, he concludes, this is on page 7, Vasher haminu ze hadas mimi sheyatza mechlal torasenu heim haomrim azav Hashem es haaretz. The pasuk, which states that God has abandoned the land, is one which reflects this perspective, this false perspective. As we read a couple weeks ago, the Makos prove this. Before some of the Makos, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Laman teidun ki ani Hashem bekarev haaretz, that I am God on the land, that there's Hashgacha in the sublunar world as well. And thus, this position is rejected. Now, while the first two opinions are rejected because they minimize the role of Hashgacha, the next two opinions are rejected because they maximize the role of Hashgacha. And these two are against the Torah. The third position can be found again on page 7. And this is the view of the Islamic Asharites, who were medieval philosophers and theologians, and their position essentially is v'hu das misheroa she'en b'mitzios davar b'mikre klal. There is no such thing as mikre whatsoever. Lo klali v'lo prati aval hakol, meaning to say they don't distinguish between hashkacha klalis and hashkacha pratis. There is no mikre at all. Aval akol birtzon v'kavana v'hanhaga, everything is dependent upon ratzon Hashem. U'mivuar hu shekol mi shiyanhig kfar yada v'zos hi kas ha'asharia min ha'ish yishma'ilim. Now, at first glance, this perspective does seem to parallel a philosophy which many Jewish thinkers adapt, especially more recent thinkers. If you look at the writings of the Michtav Meliyahu, which are in this packet, perhaps we'll get to them next time, I recently saw a letter of the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish writes in Chelek Aleph, letter number 35, Kima she'anu korin teva ha'mechuvan b'zeh ratzon ha'yoser matmid shel ha'mehaveh al havayos yisborach. In other words, nature is simply that which happens commonly, that which happens frequently, but it's an illusion, a mirage. There is no such thing as teva. Everything is gzeiras Hashem yisborach. And the truth of the matter is that intuitively this position makes a lot of sense. Why should HaKadosh Baruch Hu create something like teva in which things happen naturally or automatically? However, this particular position, the position of the Asherites, is quite different than any Jewish perspective, because they accept this even with respect to matters concerning free will. Namely, there is no such thing as free will, because everything is Hashgachas Hashem. And as we talked about earlier in the year, the notion of free will is one which we hold dear. And then they get into bigger problems, because since they say everything is hashgacha, including matters of free will, matters of choice, so then there's really no such thing as a tzaddik and a rasha, because everybody is compelled to do whatever they do, in which case they ask, why do the righteous suffer? In which case they conclude something even more astounding, which is that God is not subject to morality. Perhaps another time we could talk about the concept of morality and God being subject to morality, but certainly this perspective is against the Torah. Hatzur tamim pa'alo ki chol derachav mishpat ela munah ve'en havel tzadik v'yashar hu. We couldn't possibly say that God is unjust, that people suffer in an unjust way, and therefore this perspective, the third perspective, is also very much against the Torah. Perspective number four, which is on page 8 of your source books, is another Muslim philosophical perspective, the Methuselites. And they are very similar to the Asherites, except that they allow for limited free will. They don't go as far. They say that while there is hashgacha for animals, there isn't for inanimate objects. And Amru Shekein Gazra Chachmasu B'chol Kachbar V'hu Yigmilehu Al Shekara Oso Ba'olam Haba. Very strange idea that if a cat eats a mouse, so that means the mouse was deserving of it, and the suffering, they hold of an extreme form of what we discussed last week, Yisurin Shel Ava, so it must be that the mouse is going to get rewarded in Olam Haba because of the cat. It's a little strange as well. It does relate to a very interesting issue we're going to see shortly, that the Rambam absolutely rejects that there is hashgacha upon animals. And there are a number of reasons for that. The most basic reason is because hashgacha relates to schar va'onesh and bechira chafshis and the like. And animals have no bechira and no schar va'onesh, and therefore there's no room for hashgacha. Now, there are a number of Hasidic thinkers who do seem to extend hashgacha even to animals, and perhaps we'll get to that next week. Is that really this view of the Methuselites? I don't think so. At first I always thought that those Hasidic thinkers was quite perplexing, because they seem to be against the Rishonim. However, just the last night and this morning, I noticed a couple of Rishonim, a couple of Radaksin, and even Ezra and the like, who do seem to consider that possibility. So, God willing, maybe we'll get back to that question next week, the question of hashgacha on animals. Yes, Sammy? Okay, great. Saved by the bell. So now we'll turn to page 9, and on page 9 is where the Rambam begins discussing the Torah's perspective. Pinas Torah's Moshe Rabbeinu Alav HaShalom V'chol Mi Shenimshach Achareha Hi Sheha'adam Baal Yecholas Gemura. Number one is that there's free will. In other words, rejecting positions three and to some degree four. Ratzel lomar, shehu betiv'o uvivchiraso uvirtzono, yaseh kol ma sheyuchal ha'adam laso so, mibilti sheyivra lo davar mitchadesh klal. So number one, the importance of free will. Skipping to the next underlined section, v'chein mechlal pinas toras Moshe Rabbeinu alav ha'shalom, shehu yisaleh lo yitachein alav avel b'shum tzad minat stadin. In other words, another rejection of perspective number three is that God cannot be unjust. Tzadik v'yashar hu. V'shekol ma sheyavo la'adam min ha'ra'os v'hamakos o yasigei min ha'tovos l'ish echad o l'kahal hakol hu al tzad hadin. Anything that a person experiences is al tzad hadin. There is no such thing as injustice concerning the Ribbono shel Olam. So if somebody suffers, that means that they deserved it, seemingly. V'hayoso ra'ui b'mishpat ha'yashar asher ein avel bo klal v'afilu em nechnas kotz biyad adam v'hotziyo miyad. Even something as small as a splinter, which he removed immediately, something which is nishtaze geferlach, sorry, I lost the place. Here we are. Lo haya rak al tzad ha'onesh lo. This is an onesh. V'ilu hesig lemeat hana haya gemulo. And likewise, if you have a small pleasure, so that is a form of reward. V'chol zeh bedin, v'hu amru alav yisaleh, ki kol derachav mishpat, ela shanachnu nisakel ofanei adin hahu. We are sometimes unaware, we don't understand that form of judgment, but it is just. Skipping a little later. Yes? I don't believe so. And the question was, the Ramban we saw last week talked about Minhago Shel Olam, and perhaps this type of splinter would fall under that category. No. The Ramban would not deny that there's absolute justice, meaning to say that a person, any suffering that a person experiences is indeed just, even if it's minhago shel olam. There's no injustice whatsoever. The question that the Ramban raised, and again we'll have time, Be'ezras Hashem, to examine the Ramban's position more carefully, is that while it's certainly just, meaning to say there's no suffering which is unjust and undeserved, that might not be a reflection of the gzeirah that was done in order to punish the person. So if a person suffers based off of minhago shel olam, there's justice there. Rachmana litzlan, to say there's no justice, that type of suffering is unjust. The question is, was that a gzeirah min hashamayim sent as a punishment? Or no, it happened because of minhago shel olam, but ultimately everything that happens, even because of minhago shel olam, is taken into the broader cheshbon of schar v'onesh, and therefore is just. In other words, when, as it were, to overly simplify, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is calculating what type of suffering a person experiences, and what are his averos, and what are his mitzvos, and what were his hanaos, so that is taken into the calculation. The Ramban would certainly agree to that. What the Ramban was saying was that suffering that he experienced, which was minhago shel olam, might not have been a gzera as a form of suffering. In other words, as opposed to suffering which not everybody experiences, stubbing your toe, so that might have been a gzera. This is not a gzera, but it's still certainly taken into the calculation of schar v'onesh. But let's get back to that when we do the Ramban. Skipping again to the next underlined section, the bottom of page 9. V'anachnu namin shekol elu ha'inyanim ha'enoshim heim kefi adin v'ashem chalila lo me'ovel lo ya'anosh echad mimenu ela ha'mechuyav ha'roi lo'onesh. Nobody will suffer unless they are deserving of it.
Zehu akasa b'taras Moshe Rabbeinu ki kol ki akol nimshach achar din v'al zeh adas nimshachu divrei hamon chachameinu zal. She'atat himtzeim omrim bebir ein misa b'lo chet v'ein yisurim b'lo afon.
This is a Gemara that we saw quoted last week by the Ramban. The Gemara there, and it's in your Makoros from last week, quotes a machlokes tanaim. Is there misa below chet and yisurim below avon or not? So this position that nobody suffers that doesn't deserve it is reflective of that position that ein misa below chet v'ein yisurim below avon. The Amru, and this he says is the position of many of our chachamim. The Amru b'mida sh'ademodid ba modedin lo ze lashon ha-mishnah. Uviaru, top of page 10, b'chol makom sh'amishpat mechuyav b'hechreyach b'chuko yisaleh v'hu sh'yigmol ha-over al kol ma she'yaseh mimaisa kavod ha-yosher. V'afal pi, now here he says another parenthetical point, which we'll discuss again in a different unit, which is that a person is held accountable for things even that they weren't explicitly commanded upon. Meaning to say, human beings have the capability, even without revelation, to determine that which is ethical and moral, and thus if they violate that moral code, that natural law, then they're held accountable. V'afal pi shelo tziva ba'al yedei navi. In other words, a person could be punished even for something that wasn't commanded explicitly by God. This is an idea that many Rishonim subscribe to. The Ramban, for example, in Parshas Noach says it. V'shi'anish al kol ma'aseh ra she'yaseihu ha'ish v'afal pi shelo huzar mimenu al yedei navi. Achashu davar she'aseichel ma'azir mimenu. One's held accountable because the human intellect can discover it. Ratzalomar hazhar min aval achamas, etc. Skipping a little, uva b'divrei chachamim zal tosefes achas shelo ba shekasuv ba'Torah. There is a perspective found in Chazal that is not found in Tanakh, and that is the idea of yisurin shel ahava. And as we mentioned last week, the Rambam rejects that. But as we also mentioned last week, the Rambam rejects that because he thinks that it means that they're suffering pure, simply in order to increase schar. And if you define Yisurin Shel Ahava like the Ramban does, as we saw last week, so then there's no reason to say that this concept contradicts Tanakh. But we do see here an important point in the Rambam, which is that he acknowledges that within Chazal, within the Torah, there are different perspectives upon Hashkacha. And there isn't a single monolithic Torah perspective. Earlier, he referred to the position that he thinks is correct, which is Ein Misa B'lo Chet, V'ein Yisurim B'lo Chet. Interestingly, we saw last week that the Gemara rejects that position, at least insofar as Misa B'lo Chet. And it's a machlokas rishonim, whether it's rejected concerning Yisurin B'lo Chet. So the Rambam here tells us what he thinks the correct position is, the true Torah position, but he notes that there are indeed conflicting opinions. On the top of page 11, he says, don't be confused by the concept of Nisayon. Nisayon does not contradict this. We also saw last week that the Ramban dealt at length with that issue as well. And then we'll skip. V'asher ani aminu ani bezos hapina ratzalomar behashgacha ha'alokis hu mashaser perlecha. This is what I believe. In other words, as we said before, the Torah's position is nuanced. So first he presents psukim, then he presents certain views in Chazal, and now he's telling us what I think. Ani. V'eini nismach bezos hamun asher asapra lema sheheviani elav b'mofes. I can't prove it to you with a definitive proof. The term mofes in Rishonim means a proof, meaning to say a syllogistic proof, a proof that could be demonstrated conclusively. Step one, step two, step three yield step four. Aval esmoch ba lema shehiz ba'er etzli shehu kavanas Torah Hashem b'sifrei hanaviyim. But this is my understanding of Tanakh. In other words, as opposed to many things where the Rambam and the Mordevuchim proves philosophically, let's say, the incorporeality of God, here he's saying, I don't have any proof for this, but this is what the Torah, according to my understanding, presents. V'zeh adas Hashem aminu hu yoser me'at ha-harchakos min hadeos ha-kodmim v'yoser karov el ha-hekesh ha-sichli. In other words, it's more intellectually justified than some of the earlier positions. V'hu shani amin shashkacha ha-lokis amnam hi b'zeh ha-olam ha-tachton ratzalomar mitachas galgal ha-yareach b'shem min ha-dam levad. So here the Rambam says a fascinating thing. He says, I agree to Aristotle partially, and I disagree with him partially. When Aristotle said that there's no such thing as providence in the sublunar realm, I disagree. That goes against the Torah. However, I agree with him that the only place where we find hashgacha in the sublunar realm is concerning mankind. Whereas when it comes to animals, there is no such thing as hashgacha, or anything besides humans. V'zeh amin levado hu asher kol inyanei ishav u'ma sheyasigem mitov ora nimshach achar hadin kemo she'amar ki chol derachav mishpat. And he tells us why. Because this would be justice. Meaning to say, a lack of hashgacha concerning animals does not indicate a lack of justice, because after all, animals don't have free will. So if a mouse gets eaten by a cat, so that doesn't indicate a perversion of justice in the sense that this mouse was undeserving of being eaten, because there is no free will. Aval shar balei chayim v'chol shekein hatzmachim v'zulasam da'ati bahen Das Aristo, I agree with Aristotle there. Lo amin klal shezeha Allah nafal b'hashgacha bo. I don't say this leaf particularly fell because of hashgacha. V'ulam, skipping a little to the next bold, hashgacha lokis lefi dati lefi mashani roeh, hu, he, nimshechas achar ha-shafa ha-eloki. Hashgacha is a result of shefa eloki. V'hamin asher nidbak bo hashefa hahu hasichli. To the extent that a person is able to cling to that shefa eloki, to cling to the divine overflow, so he will experience greater shefa, and therefore greater hashgacha. Meaning to say, another reason why there is only providence with respect to man is that it's only man that's able to connect to that shefa eloki. Ad sheshav ba'al ha-seichel v'nigla lo kol ma shehu galui l'ba'al ha-seichel hu asher hischabrai lav ha-hashgacha elokis v'sha'ara lo kol pe'ulo sav al tzad ha-gmul va'onesh. Amnam, im tavas nina u'ma shebetolcha kemo shezachar v'nafal agag al mi shebebayis im haya b'mikre ha-gamor lo haya bias anashim b'sfina v'sheves ha'acherim b'veis mikra lefidati. Now here he tells us a fascinating idea about the nature of how hashgacha works. If it's true that everybody who experiences suffering or death, that's just, and that when it comes to human beings, that's a form of hashgacha, so does that mean that if a tzaddik is on a boat that sinks in the sea due to a hurricane, that miraculously the tzaddik will be saved? No. Rather, the hashgacha is that the tzaddik, who's undeserving to die, will not go on that boat. In other words, providence expresses itself in many ways. And concerning, skipping to the underlined next section, V'kfar tamra neviim gamkein al hayos hashkacha b'vnei adam. The truth of the matter is that this idea that there is actually divine providence is truly remarkable. Meaning to say, well, Aristotle is wrong, but his position is understandable. Because even the prophets found it extraordinary that there would be providence concerning man. V'shehu katanu pachus, m'shiyashgiach haborei alav. After all, humans are so small and insignificant, at least when compared to things like the celestial bodies. Kol shekein bezulaso mibalei chayim. And therefore, of course, there's not going to be hashkacha on balei chayim, who are even lower. Meaning to say, it's remarkable enough that there's hashkacha about humans. But imagine hashkacha by animals, that's too far-fetched. Amar ma'anosh v'teda'ehu, ma'anosh kisiz kerenu. And there are psukim that indicate this. The pasuk says, what is man that I should remember him, or that I should be mashkiach upon him? And that's a reflection of this idea that it's so unlikely. Parenthetically, this is an idea that the Ramban also says, especially in his Hakdama to Iov. I saw a comment, Moshe Tzvi Weinberg showed it to me, from the Chafetz Chaim in Sefer Shem Olam, which makes the exact opposite point. And in fact, it's quite interesting because I think that from our less philosophical orientation, the Chafetz Chaim's point makes a lot of sense. He writes, "V'nira mishum diyadua debidur enosh eschilu lavod elohim achirim mipnei shekafu bashkacha. V'dimu she'en kvodo shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu lischaber b'yosef hatachtonim, v'rak im hamalachim kvodo." The root of idolatry is the fact, sorry, this isn't in your source sheets. I only saw it yesterday. The root of idolatry is in the fact that people denied hashgacha, and they felt that there's only hashgacha when, or chibur, when it comes to the celestial bodies, to angels, to these elevated beings. Uve emes tausu, delagabi Hashem yizbarach, shehu bilti gvul, ubilti tachlis, Gam hamalachim ka'ayin ucha'efes nechshavu lefanav. Klapei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even malachim, of course, are nothing. They're negligible. There's no difference when compared to infinity between the number 5 and the number 10. That's actually an interesting discussion for those who study mathematics, but that's what the Chafetz Chaim is assuming. What's the difference? So, okay, let's assume a malach can reach spiritual levels many times greater than a human. Even that's not so pashut. But even if it's true, so what? So that means HaKadosh Baruch Hu is limited in some way? V'hischabruso lebria hu rak machmas godel tuvo v'chasto shemider chatov lehetiv lezulaso vimkein mistaber shihei hashkachaso midabekes yoser b'nivraim atachtonim shem chalushei koach v'shvelim v'nidkayim v'hem kitzitz novel adurab. It makes more sense that there would be hashkacha on humans than hashkacha on malachim, because if anybody needs the hashkacha, it's us, those who are like a tzitz novel. So essentially the Chafetz Chaim writes the exact opposite of the Rambam. And this, I believe, is reflective of a trend which we'll probably get back to next week, Be'ezras Hashem, which is that when you look at the more contemporary thinkers, such as the Chafetz Chaim, the Chazon Ish, Rav Dessler, almost universally, they no longer are bothered by this problem that seems to have troubled the Rishonim, that Hashgacha should in some way be limited. And this reflects itself differently in different thinkers. As we mentioned earlier, there are Hasidic sources that indicate that there's even Hashgacha on animals and the like. I don't believe that in reality this is such a radical departure from the perspective of the Rishonim, but it's something to think about. So your homework for next week, and Be'ezus Hashem will talk about it in Shir, is to consider what happened and what changed. Is it the fact that we're no longer influenced by Greek philosophy? Well, that's a possibility, but it's probably not the only reason, because the Ramban, for example, who is a very mystical thinker, also limits Hashgacha in many ways. Is it because of Kabbalah Sari? Perhaps. Something to think about. Back to the Ramban, however. Yes?
I just don't understand the Ramban. Maybe because I'm so influenced by contemporary thinkers, I just don't understand the Rambam's even potential defense of Aristotle. And like, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created man for a purpose. He wanted them to do certain things. So to me, it's an old misdaver that he would, at least as part of that creation, as part of whatever the purpose was, continue his Ashkacha on them.
So you're correct, and that's what the Rambam holds. So, in other words, Rambam says that there is Hashkacha. Your question is, what's the Havamina, right? What is the Havamina to say otherwise?
He does seem to say, at least we sort of understand where Aristotle is coming
right.
from.
Right.
From a purely quantitative or spatial perspective, I understand why humans are maybe deficient compared to the celestial beings. From
right.
From a purpose of the divine goal of creating the world and direction.
The Chafetz Chaim is so compelling. Okay. So that's your homework, is to think about that question. The Rambam continues and writes that there are many psukim concerning Hashkacha and the like. Now, then the Rambam introduces us to a very important concept, and one which he develops at great length. And that is the notion that Hashkacha is dependent upon the intellectual or spiritual achievements of a person. That it's almost naturalistic. And again, time doesn't allow us to read through most of these Rambams inside. I hope perhaps for next week you could look through them. Specifically, what you should read is chapters 17, 18, and then 22 and 23. 23 and 24, all of which are in your source books of section 3 of the Mora. But he develops the idea that I'll just one. Place where he expresses this is in the bold in the middle of page 14. Aval aamin shehashkacha nimsheches achar haseichel umidubekes bo. And that was from the end of chapter 17, the beginning of chapter 18. He writes on page 15, v'achar shehu ken yischayev lefi ma shezachartiv beperek hakodem. Ki ein ish meishei bnei adam shehisig min hashafa hahu chelek yoser gadol kafi hachanas hachomer shelo ukafi hislamdo tia hashkacha elav yoser behechreach. This is almost naturalistic. The idea that the higher level of spirituality and intellectual comprehension of God that a person achieves, that almost automatically, behechreach, naturally, causes the higher degree of hashkacha. Im hashkacha hi nimsheches achar haseichel kemo shizcharti, because hamshacha is nimshach achar haseichel. There's a fascinating comment of the Shla on that. You could read it in footnote 32. V'lo tia im hashkacha halokis bivnei adam kulam b'shav. And thus, we shouldn't expect that there be equal hashkacha among all human beings. Aval yia yisron hashkacha aleihem ki yisron shleimusam ha'enoshi zel zeh. Rather, it will depend on the degree of perfection that the person has achieved. Ulefizeh yun yisborach, yischayev behachreach shetia hashkachasu b'neviyim atzuma me'od, ulefi madregasam b'nevua, v'tiyah hashkachasu b'chasidim uvetovim kefi chasidusam v'yishronam. And thus, the degree of providence will depend entirely upon the degree of perfection that they've achieved. Achar shashir hahu mishafa haseichal haloki hu asher sam davar b'fi haneviyim. Now, the question, of course, here is how does this relate to what he said earlier? Right at the beginning of the chapter, he told us that everything is just. Nobody suffers in a way that they don't deserve. And now he's telling us that hashkacha is entirely dependent upon the degree to which a person achieves closeness to the Ribono Shel Olam. Now, what that would seem to imply is that people who have not achieved such a degree of closeness are left to mikra. And if they're left to mikra, doesn't that imply that their suffering that they experience is unjust and unfair? But he said at the beginning that nobody experiences anything that's unjust or unfair. So how do we resolve these two ideas? One possibility, which the Rambam himself alludes to, is that because a person has the capability of achieving this form of dveikus to the Ribono Shel Olam, if they don't do that, then they're left to some degree to mikra, and that's their fault, and that's just because they didn't do what they were supposed to do. In a certain sense, the lack of hashkacha is almost a form of punishment. The punishment isn't direct, you're not zapped, but rather you're left to mikra. Another possibility is what we said before, which is even though, and again, something that the Rambam himself alludes to as well, that even though a person may experience suffering due to teva, ultimately that suffering is not unjust. Meaning to say, no one will ever experience suffering that they don't deserve. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu will intervene. So, yes, people who do not achieve this closeness and this dveikus to the Ribono Shel Olam experience suffering based off of teva, but that suffering that they experience is part of the broader cheshbon of schar v'onesh. The Rambam also says on page 16 that this is a result of their being like animals. Since hashgacha, and this gets back to Simon's point, again, I don't know if it'll answer your question, but since the difference between man and animal is that man is able to connect to the Ribono Shel Olam, and that is the basis of his hashgacha, so memela, when you have humans that don't connect to the Ribono Shel Olam, they are like animals. Va'amnam hasichlim hamamrim kefi ma shechasru min hashafa ahu hayonyanam nivze v'sodru b'seder shar ha'ishay minei ba'lechayim nimshal kebehemos nidmu u'mipnei zeh hayakal lahargam. This is a fascinating idea. He says, we know that there is a halacha that moridin ve'ein malin for someone who doesn't have appropriate emunos v'deos. Of course, just lahayir, the Chazon Ish points out that this doesn't apply nowadays in our world, ayin sham, but at least the Rambam paskins that there's a halacha moridin ve'lo malin. There's a halacha even of the Rambam here writes that it's kal lahargam. So what he's saying is as follows. He's saying that earlier he said, why is it that it's justified and legitimate to kill animals? It's legitimate to kill animals because there's no hashgacha upon animals. And thus, when you have someone who's so far from the Ribono Shel Olam, such that there's no hashgacha upon him, so the Rambam says that it's kal lahargam. Now, the Rambam, to be sure, distinguishes between different categories here. And the purpose is, why would we kill Mumrim? So the Rambam writes towards the end of Mar Nevuchim, in Chela Gimel Perek Nun Aleph, that we don't, when it comes to the halacha that like Moedin Velomalin or the like, so that is not the purpose of that. That's not Begeder Onshe based in. Rather, the purpose is because their opinions are dangerous. The Rambam there writes a very interesting thing, which is that even when it comes to the false beliefs for which the person has but is not responsible for having, for example, he was taught them by his parents or by his teacher, or they came as a result of an intellectual error, so even those, while we might say, as the Rambam says in Hilchos Mamrim, we give them the din of Tinok Shenishba, we don't treat them like a mummer, we try to be makari of them, but even that, even with respect to them, it says velo memaharin lahargan, the Rambam writes. So we try to be makari of them, and velo memaharin lahargan. So why would we kill them at all? And the Rambam there explains, because their positions are a terrible danger to society, and therefore we have no choice. But the Rambam over here writes, okay, maybe they're dangerous, but how is it justified? And he answers, well, it's justified because nimshal kebehemos nidmu, because they lack that dveikus due to their false beliefs, even if they're not responsible for those false beliefs. But nevertheless, the lack of hashgacha makes it justified lahargam. Something that's perhaps very difficult for us to understand, but that's what the Rambam writes. Now, we have to go back to our question. So, the Rambam in Chela Gimel, Perek Chav Gimel, which starts on page 18-19, as I mentioned, there he goes through the whole book of Eov, and we're not going to do that together, but essentially he argues that the book of Eov, the five positions in Eov, reflect the five perspectives that he said in Hashgacha. Interestingly enough, Eov adopts the position of Aristotle. In other words, after experiencing the suffering, which he believes to be unjust, comes to the conclusion that it must be there is no Hashgacha in the sublunar realm, and he deals with the problem over there. The next major place he talks about Hashgacha is on page 25, Section 3, Chapter 51. This chapter is a fascinating chapter, and I only gave you part of it. You should really read the whole thing. The Rambam there writes as follows. First, he begins the chapter with the famous metaphor of the palace, where you have different people referring to different madrigos. Some people are not in the city, some people have their backs to the city and going the wrong way, some people are in the city and outside the antechamber, some people are in, all these relating to different hashkafos and the extent of kirva that they have to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then he continues as follows. He writes that a person should go ahead and try to cling to the Ribono Shel Olam and think about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, assuming that they have a correct conception of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If you have a false conception of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then the God that you worship or the God that you think of doesn't actually exist. And earlier he writes that's like heresy be'ones. It's not your fault, perhaps, but that's not serving God, because the God that you imagine, let's say Rahman al-Litzlan, a person imagined that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has some type of physical body, so the God that you're serving doesn't exist. So it's important to have a correct conception of God, and once you have a correct conception of God, then there's a mitzvah to think about him as much as possible. And he says this is really the purpose of mitzvos, Torah and mitzvos. In fact, the mitzvah of kriyashma and tefillah and Torah is exactly that, to help us go ahead and think about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then he says a very, very, it's a beautiful chapter, you should really read it. He gives a very practical guide as to how to grow in this respect. So he says that you start off by learning to concentrate during Shema and Shmona Esrei. Don't satisfy yourself with just Kavana during the first Bracha, the first Pasuk, but learn to concentrate during Shema and Shmona Esrei. And if you're able to think about God during Shema and Shmona Esrei, meaning to say by concentrating on the words you're saying and not thinking about anything else, so then he'll be able to expand and you'll be able to concentrate when you learn and not think about your business when you're learning. When should you think about your business? When you're doing other things, like when you're talking to your children or your wife, then you should be thinking about your business. But when you're learning, then you should concentrate 100% on the Kaddish Baruch Hu. That's what the Rambam says. Oh. And at times when you're not focusing on your business, you should make sure you're thinking about God. So if you're lying in bed and it's quiet and you haven't fallen asleep, so that's the perfect opportunity to think about the Ribono Shel Olam. I remember a shmooze I once heard from Revolbi, who was writing about how what a terrible tragedy it is that some people let their thoughts wander when they're falling asleep. Here you have an opportunity, whatever, however long it takes, 2 minutes, 5 minutes, 15 minutes, to go ahead and take this time of quiet to use it for Avodas Hashem, and to squander that opportunity and just let your thoughts wander is a terrible tragedy. And that's exactly what the Rambam writes over here. He says that period of time, that's the ideal time to think about God. And he writes that if you could do that, so then you'll be zocha tashgacha. Because as he said before, hashgacha is entirely dependent upon the degree to which a person is able to concentrate on the Ribono Shel Olam and thereby achieve that dveikus and that shafa aloki. And then he writes the following. So what makes a chassid a chassid? What makes someone truly great? The greater the person is, the more they're able to concentrate on the Ribono Shel Olam while doing Torah and mitzvos. And if they're an extraordinarily great person, even while not doing Torah and mitzvos, even when they're engaged in worldly matters, but they never are mesiach das from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And if you could achieve that level, where you're never mesiach das, so then there will be absolute hashgacha. Hashgacha will never depart from such a person. And he writes on page 26, a most extraordinary speculation has occurred to me just now, through which doubts may be dispelled and divine secrets revealed. We have already explained in the chapters concerning providence that providence watches over everyone endowed with intellect proportionally to the measure of his intellect. Thus, providence always watches over an individual endowed with perfect apprehension, whose intellect never ceases from being occupied with God. On the other hand, an individual endowed with perfect apprehension, whose thought sometimes for a certain time is emptied of God, is watched over by providence only when he's thinking of God. Providence withdraws from him during the time when he's occupied with something else. However, its withdrawal is not like its withdrawal from a person who have never had intellectual cognition, but in his case, that providence merely decreases because that man of perfect apprehension while being occupied, no intellect in actu, but that perfect man is at such times only apprehending potentially, though close to actuality. In other words, while a person capable of thinking of God isn't thinking of God, at least he could think about God bekoach, so that's different than someone who can't. At such times, he is like a skilled scribe at the time when he is not writing. Hence, it seems to me that all prophets or excellent and perfect men whom one of the evils of the world befell, had this evil happened to him during such time of distraction, the greatness of the calamity being proportionate to the duration of the period of distraction and to the vileness of the matter with which he was occupied. Unbelievable. The Rambam says that if there's ever a chassid that experiences some type of suffering or tragedy or disaster, that must be because they were Messiah Das from HaKadosh Baruch Hu for that moment. But if someone is constantly thinking about the Ribono Shel Olam, then they will never experience any type of suffering, any type of tragedy, any type of mikra. And thus, if suffering happens, it's because they were Messiah Das. This reminds me of the famous Vart from the Nefesh HaChaim on Einod Milvado. What does the Nefesh HaChaim say? If a person is concentrating and believes and has internalized Einod Milvado, then no harm could possibly befall him. And therefore, even kohos like Kishuf or the like have no effect. There are famous stories about the Griska Rav during the Holocaust, how Nazis were coming towards him and he thought about Einod Milvado and then they turned around. I saw recently in the Rebbetzin Kanievsky book that she said that during the 48 war, things were very dangerous, and she had to run around Yerushalayim, and there were all sorts of missiles and shrapnel and the like. So she was told that if you concentrate on Einod Milvado, so then nothing will happen to you. And of course, nothing happened. So idea, which seems, you know, you'd think you'd read it at first, it's a mystical idea, something that the Rambam would never say, is really an idea in the Rambam. I saw it this morning. The Ramak says it. The Ramban says it. The idea that each one with their own nusach, but to the extent that a person, the way the Rambam says it, can concentrate on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so nothing evil can befall them. I'll just tell you to note, if anybody's interested, you could read some of the Makoros here. There were those, even among the Rishonim, who felt that the Rambam's perspective here, in chapter 51, in which he clearly describes supernatural intervention, contradicts the earlier descriptions of Hashgacha, where he implies that it's naturalistic. And they felt this was a contradiction. In fact, Ibn Tibbon wrote the Rambam about this and said, I want to come visit you to ask you this question. And the Rambam responded, you can read this, it's all in the notes on 26, 27. The Rambam says, I don't even have time to do anything besides care for the needs of the community. And if you come speak to me, I will not have time to talk to you. Ibn Tibbon himself concluded that the Rambam, the resolution to this contradiction is that the Rambam held like Aristotle, which is extremely strange, since the Rambam says that he doesn't hold like Aristotle and in so many places contradicts it. This relates to a general discussion of esoteric versus exoteric readings of the Rambam. I think that that position is false, but as I said, if you want to read about this great controversy concerning the Rambam's position on Hashgacha, just take a look at some of the Makoros from page 26 to page 30. Bezras Hashem, next week we'll continue with this topic with the Ramban. Have a wonderful Shabbos.